my opinion, David Letterman perfected the top 10 list. I offer you a significantly less entertaining top 10 list in this podcast. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Pin Chasers and Brandon Legal Group. A huge thank you to Pin Chasers for hosting Drew Garabo and John Sennings down to Bowl last weekend. I attended for the third consecutive year, contributed a lot of money to the raffle, where for the second consecutive year, I won some very interesting things that I can use to benefit my next golf tournament, the sold-out Todd Wright Tour Championship that's coming up on April 5th. So I got something out of it in addition to just being in the building with so many fun, positive people having a good time. That's to everyone's credit who was involved, too many to name, but Anthony Peroni and the Peroni family host this event every year, and it's one of a number of things the Peroni family that owns all Pin Chasers in Tampa do regularly to benefit the Tampa Bay area community. Well done by the Peroni family and by Pin Chasers as the Down Syndrome Association of Tampa Bay brought in nearly $30,000 from Drew Garabo's Down to Bowl event on Saturday. Nice to see so many people, some involved with 102.5 The Bone, some not involved directly with 102.5 The Bone at Pin Chasers on Saturday. Remember, Pin Chasers, four locations throughout Tampa. For lane reservations, hours of operation, and party planning, go to pinchasers.net. For specials, and there are a lot of them, follow Pin Chasers on Instagram. Brandon Legal Group loves that Pin Chasers' newest location in Brandon is literally right across the street from the home office. I have been there with Jeremy and Sean from Pin Chasers, and we will be back soon for a quick lunch on a weekday. Brandon Legal Group is your full-service law firm. They service the greater Tampa Bay area, and they continue to pay for this podcast, so you do not have to. They ask me as a paid non-attorney spokesperson to simply remind you they're a full-service law firm, so whenever you have a legal need to find out what full service means, they welcome you to go online and request a free consult at brandonlegalgroup.com, or if you're more comfortable, call 813-902-3576 to request the free consult. Brandon Legal Group, your full-service law firm, servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. Thank you for allowing me to talk about my sponsors. My email is right.todd@yahoo.com, right.todd@yahoo.com. Let me float something here. So one of the things I won as I contribute annually money to the raffle at Pin Chasers, where 102.5 The Bone puts a ton of prizes out, and I win things, so I'm donating money that goes to the Down Syndrome Association of Tampa Bay. But the last 2 years, I have won items in the raffle that I then use for my golf tournaments. One that may not be attractive to my golfers, although I've often said in the past, no matter what concert tickets I have, and I've had some interesting ones over the year via my contacts, not just Mike Olivero, but primarily Mike Olivero at 102.5 The Bone in Tampa Bay. Considering I average roughly or over 100 golfers per event, it's amazing to me how someone of that 100 or more is a fan of just about any act that I have concert tickets to. It could be a musician, it could be a comedian, it could be some form of show. Granted, does this play to the theory of free beer always tastes better than beer you pay for? I'm well over 9 months without touching beer. So you tell me. That theory used to apply to me. I'm just glad I don't drink it anymore. One of the things I won in the raffle were two tickets to the building that will always be the Citrus Bowl to me in Orlando in June to a concert where the headliner is Shakira. Do I like Shakira? You damn right I do. Do I think I can handle one of her concerts? Probably not. I don't know. Maybe it's just, and I'm all for being surrounded by thousands of Latin women, but it's probably not a good idea for me to go. So my plan is to probably give these away at my golf tournament, but if you'd like to email me and make your case why you would like or make me an offer, doesn't have to be a cash offer. It can be for two Shakira tickets in June in Orlando. Go ahead. Because I don't know. This is going to test the theory at my golf tournament. Someone always likes that act, especially with free tickets. It's one of the things I won in the raffle for Down to Bullet Ping Chasers last weekend. So if you'd like to make me some form of an offer, including your appeal for why you would want two tickets to Shakira in Orlando in June, email me at write.todd@yahoo.com. Make me some form of an offer, an argument why you would be a worthy recipient of these tickets. The other things I won, I know I can get use of at my golf tournament. Shakira, not sure. We'll see. So here's a top 10 list in no particular order. I have bottom freezer envy. Drew Garabo gave it this name. When I visit friends at their newer homes, I notice that almost all of them have a refrigerator that has the freezer at the bottom. I was raised in a household with wonderful grandparents where our freezer was always at the top of the refrigerator device. When I bought my first home, the appliance that I inherited in the condominium was a refrigerator with a freezer up top. Recently, I had to replace that original appliance, and I shopped for a refrigerator with a freezer on the bottom. And I saw that just about every quality refrigerator with the freezer on, the bottom cost 2 to 3 times more than a refrigerator with the freezer up top. Could I have afforded the new Whirlpool refrigerator with the freezer on the bottom? Yes, I can. Did I purchase the refrigerator with the freezer on the bottom? I did not. I went with virtually the same refrigerator with the freezer up top. And now I have even more of a case of bottom freezer envy for those of you, like many of my friends, who have the freezer at the bottom. Why aren't all refrigerators made with the freezer at the bottom? Why is it that refrigerators with the freezer at the bottom cost 2 to 3 times more than those with the freezer at the top? The Titans should trade the number one pick. It's just my opinion. This is being kicked around. I've thought about it for a while, you know, since New England gagged the number one pick, much like the Texans did a few years ago. They go out and win a meaningless game and then fire the coach who wins the meaningless game who cost them that number one pick. The Titans are a bad team. This is quite a defining moment for a new general manager, a second-year head coach with an offensive background. with a quarterback that few people believe in. I guess Will Levis is kind of the new Desmond Ridder to me. I believe it when I see it. The Titans could just take Cam Ward, number one, but are we sure, to borrow a line from Gil Alexander and Kelly Bidlin on VEASAN, are we sure Cam Ward is worth the number one pick? Now, in the end, you've seen this movie before. No matter what you hear about quarterbacks dropping in the NFL draft, by the time we get to the day of the draft, quarterbacks move up. And often they go number one, and they go high in the first round. And I would imagine that's going to happen with Cam Ward, whether the Titans take him or someone trades for the pick to take him. But I think the Titans can get enough for the number one pick from someone who believes Cam Ward is a franchise quarterback, and the Titans need more than one player, one franchise quarterback, to start building that team back up to the team that I love. Famously, at the end of the 20th century, beat the Jacksonville Jaguars three times in the same season. So for anyone who says it's tough to beat a team three times in the same season, they've never bothered researching it. It is a myth. And the best example is the year the Titans went to the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 34. They lost to the Rams, fell 1 yard short of a PAT to tie the game and presumably send it to overtime. But to get there, the Titans had to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars in Jacksonville in the AFC title game, which they did, just like they beat the Jacksonville Jaguars both meetings in the regular season in Nashville and in Jacksonville. And that year, those Jacksonville Jaguars won every other game they played. Yep. The Jacksonville Jaguars that year beat everybody else they played in the NFL except the Tennessee Titans, who they lost to both times in the regular season and at home in the AFC Championship game. Moving on, why have 15 hookers, whores, sex workers, etc. won an Oscar? I'm not talking about in their real life. That's none of my business. But women who have portrayed some form of a hooker, whore, sex worker, including the most recent Oscar show that I didn't watch, even though I'm a fan of Conan. Best actress. The role, sex worker, hooker, whore, whatever you want to go with. That's 15. You can go look it up. The research was also done by Bill Maher on his Real Time show before the 15th actress won the Oscar two nights after he talked about it on his show. So why is playing a hooker so celebrated by the Academy? Have you taken a look as you start to form opinions in 2025 on who's going to win and who's not going to win in the NFL? Have you taken a look at the offensive play callers in the NFC North? Because we've got everything in place. Every team, even the Jaguars, have a general manager. And every team has a head coach. Hang on. Nope, Andy Reid hasn't retired yet. An offensive coordinator, an offensive play caller, a defensive coordinator, a defensive play caller. We have everything in place. Here are your offensive play callers in the NFC North. Matt LaFleur is still calling offensive plays for the Green Bay Packers. He's good. Kevin O'Connell is still calling offensive plays for the Minnesota Vikings. He's good too. Ben Johnson is the new head coach in Chicago. Well paid, highly coveted. Ben Johnson will call the offensive plays for Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears, which means Ben Johnson is no longer calling the offensive plays for the Detroit Lions, for Dan Campbell, and for Jared Goff. That would be John Morton. Was not on the Lions last year. John was in Denver, and no, he wasn't calling plays. Sean Payton calls plays in Denver. John Morton hasn't called a play since he was fired by Todd Bowles as offensive coordinator of the New York Jets in the year that set them up to take Sam Darnold high. He had Josh McCown, who probably knew more about the playbook and offense than John Morton did, and he shoehorned Bryce Petty, remember that hype, in there for three games and lost all three. You know, when Todd Bowles fires you as an offensive coordinator, you really stink, because Todd Bowles knows next to nothing about how to call offensive plays and how that should be done. Todd Bowles most recently fired Byron Leftwich as offensive coordinator of the Buccaneers, and Leftwich has been unemployed ever since. That is your biggest sign. The Lions are headed in the wrong direction, and that their window of opportunity, a small one the last 2 years, has closed on reaching and winning a Super Bowl in Detroit. Their play caller of offense is so far inferior to the other three in their own division. Good luck with that. There's a television show on Hulu that I recently finished the first season of. I was on board from the beginning when they dropped three episodes and then weekly with the next five. And I thought it was very well done, well cast, and it kind of plays the hits for me because I tend to like shows like this, and I don't know why. The show is Paradise. And I won't spoil it for you, but I will say it's from the showrunner that brought you This Is Us, which I never watched a minute of. I only knew Mandy Moore was on the show. And the feature character in Paradise, who is a Secret Service agent for the President of the United States, was also in This Is Us. And I saw him doing an interview on Seth Meyers' late night show, and I'm like, that guy's cool. So I like him as an actor from Paradise, and I like him based off who he was, at least the portrayal of himself in a late night television show where he was interviewed. So I'll say this about Paradise, because I like the whole idea that the show wasn't written for this one season. The show is a story that was sold to Hulu for three seasons. The second season has been picked up. Now, we've been down this road before with another show I've done this podcast about, Manifest, where Jeff Rake wrote the whole thing. And NBC dumped it after 2 years, and people like me said, what's the rest of the story? We got to be able to see it. Netflix came along, said, Jeff Rake, wrap up four seasons in this many episodes. And he did. I hope we get to see how this all plays out. And Paradise, my early prediction, and if you haven't watched an episode, I'm not really spoiling it for you, but for those that have watched the first season, I think the season finale wasn't really a finale as much as it was a break in the story for what we're going to see in a different setting in the second season, and then we'll get back to where we were in the first season, and just put me down for the square where the agent's daughter kills the secretly deadly cute girl, adult girl, obsessed with playing Wii tennis at the end of this show when it finally wraps up. For those who continue to rave about how great the Four Nations Cup was for hockey, and this is going to be a bigger podcast. So if you raved about, oh, the Four Nations, oh, I love the Four Nations, oh, I was one of the 8 million watching the Four Nations, wasn't the Four Nations great? Oh, yeah, Canada beat US in the Four Nations, but I love that. I wish more hockey was like the Four Nations. Can you name the other two nations that were in the Four Nations? Don't look it up. Other than USA and Canada, you're this big fan of the Four Nations Cup and what it meant for hockey. Can you name the other two nations? I don't think many of you can. That's part of the problem. I am originally from the city of Cincinnati. My grandparents brought me to Florida with them when I was very young. I've since been back to Cincinnati a few times in my life. I remain a flag-flying fan of the history of the Cincinnati Reds, not so much the modern team that pretty much annually has no shot. It's just a matter of time, like, where will Ellie De La Cruz have a chance to win a World Series other than Cincinnati? And there's fans of other teams who feel the same way about their best players. Why did it take me until this advanced age in my life to learn, to know, to experience, to taste, and become partially obsessed? And I'm not a fan of sweets. I'm a salty guy. I'm not a fan of sweets. Grater's Black Raspberry Chocolate Chip Ice Cream. Why am I just finding out about this now? Some of you may already know what I'm talking about. I would imagine most of you don't. So at least I'm ahead of those of you who don't, whether you're from Cincinnati or probably not. As Paradise ended, another show I like has started, and I will wait every week for it. I'm a huge fan of Jeff Probst, and we're on the 48th season of Survivor. Now, the ironic part about me being a fan of Survivor is I never watched the first season. I know Richard Hatch, Naked, all that. I never watched it. I came in a little later, not like 5 years ago. To me, the worst episode of Survivor is the finale because I don't like how the winner is determined. That said, I've just started the newest season of Survivor, getting to know the new cast, getting to know the new twists. And I keep hearing this term on the show that is used by predominantly men when something happens to excite them. No, this isn't a sexual thing, and I would hope men aren't saying this in the bedroom. And I have grown tired of this for a while now, and it's reaching a point where it's starting to bother me. Has anyone else noticed too many guys, when they get excited about something, use the term, let's go. Do we have Tom Brady's appeal, who's associated more with the LFG, let's frickin' go, cleaning it up there, and his what, let's go podcast? Is that where this came from? 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, as long as I, the let's go was on the front end of whatever your team name was. It was the cheer. So if your favorite team was, you pick. Let's say your favorite team was the Dodgers. There was a let's go Dodgers. It was common. It's probably still somewhat common, but it was around for a while. Well, now we've gone from the, you put the team name at the end of let's go for let's go Dodgers or let's go Chargers, not to pick all LA teams. I'm just throwing teams out there. Let's go Orioles. You don't hear that as much anymore. So we've taken the team name out of the end of it, and now it's just let's go. And it's a reaction to something positive that's happened, and I don't like it. I just don't. It's really starting to annoy me. As a way to celebrate something a man is excited about. Where do you want to go? Matt Stafford will continue to be the quarterback of the Los Angeles Rams for the 2025 season. This was so close. You have no idea. To not happening. To the Rams moving on to any combination of Jimmy G, Stetson Bennett, Sam Darnold, Aaron Rodgers, all the above, none of the above for 2025, with an eye on, as I've said in the past, my opinion, Joe Burrow, for when Joe Burrow tells the Bengals, yeah, I'm not playing here anymore. Trade me. The Burrow continued employment quarterbacking the Rams doesn't happen unless, did I say Burrow? Stafford's continued employment with the Rams doesn't happen if not for Stafford's wife apologizing to some key people in the organization for some things she has said that shouldn't have been said. And it's tough for NFL insiders and other people who work for rights holders to report when a player's wife is a problem. You may have heard about it many, many years ago involving the wife of a quarterback probably best known for his days with the Redskins, Gus Frerotte, and how it got out his wife was a major pain in the ass. And you know a wife is a major pain in the ass when it gets out. Well, I'm telling you, it got out about Matt Stafford's wife. And if she hadn't apologized for some things, Matt wouldn't be quarterback in the Rams in 2025. And she did the apology in person in the office. Last thing, as the NHL trade deadline approaches, and there will be more deals after I finish this podcast, Tampa Bay's deal with Seattle, and I think Detroit was in on it for some salary reasons or a draft pick, My opinion of that deal from a Lightning standpoint is the following. The Lightning playing extremely well leading up to this deal, I think, was a big reason why it happened. You will have Lightning homers celebrating the return of Yanni Gourde. That's their focus. Okay? You will have Lightning naysayers saying, great, we just traded more of our future away. Two more first round draft picks gone. What are we doing? Why do we keep trading the picks? That's what the naysayers will say. Here's what I say. Bjorkstrand's the highlight of the deal. That's the guy. That's the one that shows me the Lightning organization is convinced they can win the cup not only this year, but next year as well, because Bjorkstrand's deal is through next year. Very talented, versatile forward that suddenly is a key piece for John Cooper and the Lightning. That was 10 things. Might have felt like more. I got off on some tangents, but trust me, it was 10 things. Got any thoughts on any of those, or have you already sent the Shakira email? Wright.Todd@yahoo.com. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Pin Chasers and Brandon Legal Group. We'll talk to you next time.